Good morning. Sunday, August 16th, 2015, 6:35. 6:35, yes, I'm out. Sunday morning, I got it going. In large part because it was a really rasty night. And I gave it up about an hour ago. I got up and found I didn't have coffee waiting, so I had to brew coffee. I'm barely alive, but I'm out, I'm walking. The sunrise was much prettier in person than it was in the photograph. It was much nicer while I was putting on my boots than it was when I finally got out to take a picture. That's the nature of sunrises and sunsets, is that they are somewhat transient. Somewhat transient, not transient. Transient. So, 75,000 total. Last 2 days, 5K. Looking at 5K today. Book is stretching its legs into the 80, perhaps 90,000 range, which is, man, as soon as I find the endpoint, this sucker is just about wrapped up. We've found a lot of people from our past. We've got some new people to meet and to play with. Sharps and Franklin are the first two new crew. We're going to see a return of now first mate Alberta Ross. And I don't know if I mentioned Chief Stevens comes back for this one. She'll be, I think she's probably going to be the engineer for the next little while. She has her own agenda, which she doesn't actually elucidate, but like everyone, she has her own agenda. And like everyone, this is, I'm going to transition into a discussion that we've been having about social media and its efficacy and utility in various modes. And this was brought about because there was a study on Google that discussed how to increase engagement. And the data are amusing. But the fundamental flaw has to do with how they are counting engagement. So, for example, a plus one is an engagement. It's the same engagement as if you get a comment. A plus one is the same engagement as if you get a comment. And I don't think they counted comments. I'd have to go back and look again. But reshares, mentions, all those things are measures of engagement. My problem is that they're easy to count, and they don't actually, taken in the abstract, they don't actually mean anything. I find myself doing it myself. I'm not actually engaged in a post, but I'll plus one it. I'll plus one it not because I'm engaged, because I like the person. It struck me funny. And then there's the, you should put an image, a photograph, a digital image or something, in every post, because that doubles engagement over those that don't. Well, not quite, but significantly improves engagement. So you get a lot more plus ones, you get a lot more reshares. If you put in an image. And now the problem with this is that just putting in an image doesn't... I have a hard time thinking that, you know, if I put an image of a buffalo in a post about social media marketing, is that going to help? If I put an image of a small square of white, it's an image. Will it help? I don't think so. The implication is that the image has a causal relationship with and with their loose interpretation of engagement. And I suppose in a certain sense it probably does. Going with their definitions of the terms, I suppose, you know, having a picture is much more likely to attract the fickle eyeball of fate to actually look below the image and see if there's actually some text there that might be interesting or carrying more content. So, from my perspective, yeah, I get it. But I'm not looking for engagement. Well, maybe I am, a little bit. But I'm looking for engagement in a very specific way. I'm looking for engagement from the people who know me. I'm not looking to attract attention. I'm not looking to be discovered. I'm not looking to find new people. It's not my primary goal. My primary goal is to interact with you guys. Interact with the people who know me, who follow me in various places, and to keep from alienating any of you by being too much of a social media douchebag. And it's probably true that I err on the side of caution. I don't put out explanatory, linky kinds of things. Unless I have a really good reason. And typically, I'm really fussy about what constitutes a really good reason. I put a link to the TOMMW blog on my 1000th episode. I've done it before under protest, but 1,000, okay, that's cool. That's something. That's worth a post. I was talking to Patrick McLean the other day, and he said he'd seen my photographs come across, and he thought, well, that's nice. Yeah, it was just a weather report until we hit 1,000, and he realized, oh my God. Which is sort of the point, which is why I've been doing it the way I've been doing it. Because when people discover what that weather report really is, I don't get a, oh, he's linking to his podcast again. I get a, oh my God, how wrong was I? That's engagement. That's cognitive engagement. That's the level of engagement that I think is significant. I want to not just engage your fingertip and your eyeball for a few microseconds. I want to engage you cognitively. I want you to think about what it is I'm saying, what I'm doing, how it works. And I don't expect everybody will. Which led to a long discussion about the underlying theoretical foundation that I think is the whole reason social media exists. And I think it exists because it serves a human need. And I don't think the human need is information. We've got Google. If you need to look something up, Google. If you need a piece of information, Google. If you need to know about something, Google. Chances are Google has it. And it's probably a YouTube video to tell you exactly how to do it. It may be a collection of articles about what the current thinking in the field might be. I mean, if you're just interested in information, Google. Or Bing, I don't, you know, whatever. Pick your, I don't think anybody would use Bing, but that's just my bias. DuckDuckGo. There's plenty of opportunities to find out information. There's plenty of opportunities to find stuff. And part of it has to do with the fundamental understanding of social media. Good morning. And John Ward made a comment about how things have changed so much since I started out. I didn't even have social media when I started writing. Well, that's true, because when I started writing, there wasn't, you know, I started writing in like 62, 63. So yeah, that was before, well before the internet, which was 69. And even then, you know, it was much later before it began to actually get any traction outside of a half a dozen academic institutions that were exploring the notion of linked computers. But yeah, in 2007, he's thinking, 2007, we don't have social media the way we have it today. And on one hand, yes, that's true, because the issue is not, did we have social media? The issue is the way we have it today. That's true. And when you start going back to the roots of social media, which were the bulletin board systems, AOL, CompuServe, those early days of retail network access, those are social media, because they made the opportunity, Monk Post, they provide the opportunity for people to talk to people, to form communities, to create, I'm going to use the term neighborhoods because I like this as a metaphor, to create neighborhoods that are no longer bound by geographical proximity. So, I started trying to think about what causes people to invest the time and energy and money into getting a computer, getting online, joining communities, forming communities. Why have we gone through, you know, LinkedIn, MySpace? Still have Facebook. Why is Twitter? Why Google Plus? Why do these things keep forming? It's because they form. They serve a need. They serve an interesting function in not just in American culture, not just in Western culture, but in global culture. It's not as widespread in other places of the world, I don't believe, but it's still, you know, you look at China, right? There are more people on the internet in China than there are people in the U.S. So there, it's, which is true of just about everything in China. I started thinking about, well, why do we do this? There has to be some sort of motivator, there has to be some sort of drive. And somebody dropped Abe Maslow and his hierarchy of needs into the mix, which clicked. It finally clicked. It's, if you go back to BI, before internet, 100 years BI, people hung out on their front porches, they gossiped over their back fences, they formed bonds with the people who lived around them, as much for personal protection as anything, mutual protection, as much as mutual support. But there's this, the drive, Maslow's suggestion is that it's a function of affiliation and affection, and it's something that we all crave. It's something that we're all capable of, and so it's a very human thing to band together. That affiliation drive augments all of the lower level drives because it helps enhance security. It helps enhance pretty much all, you know, not having to go it alone. It makes it much easier when you need to raise a barn or collect your cows or bury a horse or whatever. So we have this need for affiliation. I think it's why churches have formed. I think it's why there's the Rotary Club. I think it's why people join Knights of Pythias, whatever. Oddfellows. The Lodge. Whatever Lodge. So there's this need for affiliation. As the population, particularly in the U.S., scattered. We no longer have, in the same way we did a century ago, we no longer have these conclaves where there might be four families on a block, all the way from great-grandfather down to the toddlers. They might all live in a town, in a city, all on the same block. They might all live on the same ranch in the West. Not necessarily in the same house, but, the elder son goes, down the lane a bit and builds a house and helps run the farm with the old man. That spreads. Maybe he buys the spread next door. Who knows? But with industrialization and the redistribution of population in the United States that's happened over the last century, there's a sort of fragmentation. It's like, I've got these people who live next door, but, other than Fred, who lives on this side, I'm not too thrilled with the people who live across the street, or the guy who lives on the other side, or the one who lives behind us, who has loud parties until 4 in the morning. These aren't people that I really feel a strong need to affiliate with, and life outside is getting a little bit scary, so perhaps I'll do a little bit of cocooning and spend a little more time inside. And, well, let's see what the internet has. So I'll join a community, and it'll be people that I like to hang out with, people I like to talk to, people I like to, or people, in some cases, people I like to watch because they generate a lot of drama, and other cases it's people I like to watch because I just can't believe they are so goddamn stupid. So there's a certain level of affinity need that I think social media serves, and I think it served it since the early days of the BBS. I think it did in the early days of the internet before the web. I think it continues to do that in spades now, with the explosion of Facebook, with the explosion of Twitter. Twitter's still out there. And I had to point out to John that blogging and podcasting are in fact social media. It's a way to have a conversation with an audience, and the audience talks back, which makes it social media. That's the sort of the definition, the de facto definition of social media. Social media is when the audience can talk back. And so I postulated that this might be one of the drives, one of the reasons that social media happens, that we all have this need for affiliation. And of course somebody comes back with, well, I don't come here because of the affiliation. I don't care about people. People are miserable. I just come here for the information. And I'm like, well, if you hate people, why don't you Google? Because there's nothing here you're not going to find on Google. It might be a little more current. You might be able to get a little bit more insight. But if you hate people, why the hell read an 8,000 word stream of post, comment, counter comment to get down to the bottom to tell us you're not here for the people, you don't like people. You're here for the content. The fact that you might have only a limited real life affiliation and that satisfies your drive doesn't obviate the reality that the level of that need varies across people. Mine's different than yours. Yours is different than John's. John's is different than Clyde's. So getting at a fundamental model, a fundamental reason for why social media exists, I think it's worth chatting about, worth talking about. I'm not sure I'm right, but if you go back to pretty much all of psychology lit, things people do are very seldom, oh, I felt like it. I mean, on the surface, I felt like it is a pretty good reason, but why did you feel like it? What is driving you to feel like it? what motivates you to spend the time and energy and effort. Now, John Ward, I get in this conversation about public versus private, and I post very little in public, as most of you know. I do that for a reason, and it has to do with my belief about what constitutes engagement. It comes with my understanding of where I think my messages might be accepted and acceptable. A public post from me, which seems perfectly innocuous, might be spam to someone else. And so I'm really sensitive to just because I think it's good information doesn't mean everybody is going to think it's good information. I'm more interested in creating the content that readers want, that you guys want, which is the next goddamn book. Give me the next goddamn... I mean, this chat in the morning is fun. It's nice. It lets you touch base with me, and it gives me an opportunity to organize my thinking and to talk to you. But... wait. I don't think there's anybody listening to this podcast right now who would say, oh, yes, please postpone publication of your next book for a couple of days while you give us two or three more cogent and pithy blog posts, or find exactly the right image to go on your next podcast. I'm willing to bet that's not the case. I could be wrong, but I'm willing to bet. In fact, I am betting, because I'm not doing that. I'm focusing on getting the next book. The only reason this podcast works is because it's when I'm doing something else. I'm not, it's not taking time away from writing. It's not taking time away from the other things that I think are more important to do. Like getting well. So, yeah, it's been an interesting 24 hours. I did make my 5K yesterday. It was late when I finally got there, but I did make it. I'm looking forward to the next 5K today. And hoping that there won't be that many more days of 5K before I've got a completed draft, and I'll be looking for beta readers. So, yeah, here I am at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.